Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Happy Friday. Man, do we have a lot to get to. Steve, what's it like on the ground in Green Bay right now?
It is overcast, but it's day two of a really big deal, a tremendous celebration of football and all things Packers football in Green Bay. And I'm excited for day two. I got a long day. I'll be working ESPN tonight, 6 to 10, ESPN 94.5. But we're here to talk to the smart guys.
Well, hold on, Steve. You sound a little less sharp than usual.
Right? Is that
Manhattan involved at the end of the day yesterday?
How could you not cheer loudly? I mean, that golden
it was Supper
the
Club
was incredible.
Themed, right? Yesterday, was there a Manhattan involved?
I did not have an. Actually, here's the surprising thing. I didn't drink.
Good for
did
you.
Did not drink. Wow. All right. Good well, for, all right.
So you were the only one of the 205,000 that
didn't. Between Rodgers, Love, and grab bag, I'm sure we're going to come back to the draft. But any initial thoughts before we get into the breaking news of the day with Judge Dugan?
Another opportunity to be super proud of the state of Wisconsin. We showed out. We showed up. I mean, 205,000 people is the official estimate for the NFL. Last year, the draft in Detroit drew 250 for the entire 3 days.
Yeah. We're going to top that
today, no doubt about it. It looked like everybody had a ton of fun. And you know, I got a lot to say about the Packers in both grab bag and in Love and Rodgers. But it's I was proud to be a Packer fan. I was proud to be a Wisconsinite last night, and I will be for the entire weekend. We looked good.
Yeah, what a showcase for the state. When you think about the economic impact, it's terrific. And it shows how sports, I think, are one of the last few things that really foster community and bring
Amen.
People together.
Amen.
Where it doesn't matter what you look like, where you worship, who you
right.
vote for. Like, we need more of that energy that was on display in Green Bay last night.
For sure.
And less of probably what we're going to devolve into pretty quickly here.
All right. Well, let's get into it because I know we were going to spend more time on that. But I think it's we'd be remiss to not start with the breaking news that happened literally right before we went on air. And the fact that it has been confirmed that the FBI has arrested local judge Hannah Dugan. And I had not been following the story as closely as it seems like I should have been. But I guess immediately, Joe, you seemed like you want to.
Yeah. Like, in this country, no one is above the law. Period. At least that used to be the case. Right. Right. Like, now we have an administration in D.C. that is pushing the bounds of law. You know, criminal indictments were just walked away from. I believe, and I want to live, in an America where no one, from a president to a judge to the common citizen to the person here undocumented who still gets the protections of the Constitution, is not above the law. Judge Dugan should get due process. She should get a hearing before her peers. And if she is found to have broken the law, she should be held accountable for that. And there's a second layer to this story that we need to make part of the immigration conversation that's happening in this country. Okay, we want, in the name of public safety, even people who are here undocumented to be participants in the judicial system. If an undocumented person is in a car accident or, you know, is the victim of a crime, we want them to feel like they can avail themselves of the judicial system. And what has been happening in the Milwaukee County Courthouse is a cause for concern, and we got to figure that out, right? If you've got ICE agents, they're picking off people who are there to, you know, appear and testify in a criminal case or who are arrested and then show up for their hearing. If what we're doing is rounding those folks up, we are disincentivizing people from participating. And I believe that makes our community less safe. And so I just want to point out that, like, that's the part of this that needs more conversation. And Judge Dugan will get due process as she should.
Bill?
Joe and I are in agreement on most of that. I think the judge should get due process. There are alleged facts that I won't go into because they're alleged. We'll see how those play out. But at the end of the day, I think a couple of facts that are really important for the listeners to understand is the courthouse is a public building. So the feds could go in mm-hmm. there at mm-hmm. any time to get somebody who's here illegally or a criminal that they're looking for. And so that... What's alleged here is she obstructed justice. And again, I want her to get due process. She's apparently in federal custody right now. We'll see how this all shakes out. But I think it's a message to judges across the country that, you know, you got to follow the law. Joe and I are in full agreement on that. Whether you're the president of the United States or a judge in Milwaukee County, the law is the law, right? And there's really no gray area on that.
And how do you feel about the second part of what Joe said as far as, because it's not even just the judicial system. We're also hearing about this with people, the IRS handing over undocumented immigrants' information, and so people being afraid to file their taxes, which is hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is a realignment federally, anyway, about, you know, what the new policy is of the administration. We are going to take care of Americans who are here legally first, and everyone else has to get in line and go through the formal process. And some of this is going to be messy, I think, over the next maybe months or even a couple of years worth of this.
I just want to say, like, taking care of Americans first is a fine sentiment, but part of that is public safety. And when we know the reality is that for the last 30 years, millions of people, at times when Democrats were president, Republicans were president, came here undocumented. If what we are saying is we are cleaving you off from the system, and if you should harm accidentally or, you know, intentionally someone who is here legally, like, and they are not part of the system anymore, that makes everyone else less safe.
All right, let's go to our first break. Steve is up in Green Bay. We are here with Bill McCosh and Joe Sepecki. Political Power Hour. It is only an hour today. Joe's got to go do candidate stuff.
Got to hit the road.
So we'll be back right after this. They want to get my a whole day dedicated to us? No, dedicated to you, the WTMJ listener. Come celebrate WTMJ Day with us, your favorite WTMJ host. We're having a private tailgate at the Brewers game Saturday, May 17th. We're going to have food and drinks. You can come hang out with us. Plus, we're going to get you tickets to the game as the Brewers take on the Twins at AmFam Field. Get more information and secure your tickets at WTMJday.com. Tickets are going to go fast, so sign up today. We'll see you at the ballpark for WTMJ Day, Saturday, May 17th, sponsored by Woodman's. All right. Welcome back to the, I think we're still calling it the Political Power Hour. Bill McCoshin, Joe Sepecki. Steve is up on remote, on location at the draft. So let's move on to talk about the developments in Ukraine and Russia this week. It was one of the deadliest attacks this week as far as Russia having a strike on Kyiv, and there was 12 people, at least 12 people killed.
12 people injured, 87 injured in the deadliest assault on the Ukrainian capital since July, which led to President Trump putting on Twitter, I am not happy with the Russian strikes. Not necessary. Very bad timing. Vladimir, all caps, stop. Because that's how we apparently conduct high-level diplomacy now.
I would say I'm for peace. I've been for peace all along. I don't think we have willing parties on the peace issue. I don't think Russia wants peace. I don't think Ukraine wants peace. And honestly, I think that leaves us and our Western allies in a tough spot, right? Do we do what we have traditionally done, which is just fund Ukraine, no questions asked, you know, for as long as this goes on, which could be a lifetime? Or do we continue to try and force peace some way, shape, or form? Joe raises it, and it's a fair point. I mean, the president overestimated how quickly he could get this resolved. You know, it's tough. These are deep-seated, maybe not Middle Eastern-type deep-seated that have gone on for centuries, but these are pretty deep-seated divisions between Ukraine and Russia that won't be overcome overnight.
But sometimes complicated offers clarity. And I've been thinking about this and thinking about you, Bill, and here's what I want to ask you. How much of Wisconsin territory north of Highway 29 are you willing to roll over and let Canada take? If they decide to roll tanks over the border and say, you know what, your hometown of Superior is now part of Canada, and after months and months and years of fighting, the line is at Highway 29, are you prepared to say, yeah, you know what, take it, Canada, it's yours?
When I was a kid, we wanted to be our own state. We were going to be the 51st state called Superior.
We were going to take
the UP.
But
and
you
I
understand
think we
my
have
point.
More weaponry than Canada does. I think the city of Superior has more weapons than Canada.
You understand my point, though?
I do.
Right? And so, like, this is it's hard and it's messy, and the work of peace is difficult. But it should be clarifying that if Vladimir Putin wants to end this, turn around and tell the Russians to go home. That, like, if you want to negotiate in good faith, and you say there's a ceasefire, stop bombing civilians on Easter Sunday. Like, there is a person here who bears more of the blame, and it's Vladimir Putin. It's not Vladimir Zelensky. It's not the people of Ukraine. And we can be clear-eyed about that.
But some of the details of this are maddening, right? Like, one of the things the United States wants is to for Crimea to officially be part of Russia, which, by the way, they've had since 2014 when Barack Obama was
multiple presidents since then.
Right? Yes. So why is that hard? I'm not sure why that's hard.
I agree. And if it was easy, Trump would have solved it on day one like he promised us. He hasn't. And I don't think it is befitting the American presidency to this week. What it seems like Secretary of State Rubio is hinting at is like, Trump's just tired of this.
I was going to say, answer just to wash your hands of it and say, all right, well, you guys got to deal with it then?
I don't know the inside details, but one of the things I think they're worried about is the relationship between Russia and China, right? And where does that go if this whole thing falls apart?
Yeah, well, maybe we shouldn't start a trade war with China that drives them into the arms of our other geopolitical foes. I don't know. I'm just spitballing here.
The chairman in waiting.
Steve, you've been pretty quiet. You got anything to add?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm listening to this, and it's a difference between a campaign and real life. Yeah. This stuff is hard, scary, dangerous, and all the things you say in a campaign, I'll end the war in one day, I'll fix the tariff situation. It's all nonsense, but in this case, it won an election. I think we have to be big boys and big girls here and understand that these things are going to take time. What would I do? I'd have Marco Rubio all over this stuff, and I would never let him get away. I think the president's entourage includes, the last gentleman with the last name, Wyckoff.
Steve Wyckoff,
yeah,
he's been handling all that stuff. But where's Marco Rubio on this? I know there's a lot of big, big stories across the world that he has to deal with. This should be one of them. The bottom line is, I think that Crimea is a great example of how it gets hard and stubborn. They've had it since 2014. They've had it since the Barack Obama administration. And Zelensky doesn't want to let go. He does not want to hand it over, even though it's already there. That's the problem.
But I do think
it requires big people to do big things.
But I do think Zelensky's issue at the moment is not all of Crimea. It's everything beyond Crimea. Mm-hmm. Like, that seems like where this
His red line is he wants to be part of NATO, which our European allies and we are not going to let happen.
So. Why not? The point of NATO is to stop land grabs in Europe, right? And the only time we've ever had to enact Article 5 was after 9/11, when all of our European and global allies came to our defense.
A lot of people argued that was the trigger. When they sought to be in NATO, that's when Russia decided to invade.
So, yeah, I mean,
if Ukraine falls, what's next? That's the question. Even though they're not part of NATO.
Poland. Vince and I are very concerned.
All right. On that note,
for the south side of Milwaukee, here for you.
Let's take a quick break. Steve Scafidi, I am Kristen Bry. We're here with Bill McCashin and Joe Zepecki. And let's talk a little bit about the other country you just mentioned, China.
Let's do it.
Are there talks?
Yeah.
Is it just an imaginary friend? I don't know. We'll find out.
It's Festivus every
Point
week
taken
here
on WTM today.
I love the Green Bay Packers. We love the green and gold in all.
All right, well, we're not talking Packers quite yet, but welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi is up on location, remote in Green Bay. We got Bill McCashin and Joe Zepecki here. We only got a couple minutes, so let's at least start with the softening tone Trump seemed to have taken this week, both with conversations with China and talking about tariffs and trade deals, but also a softer tone on Jerome Powell. And I guess, what do you make of that, Bill McCashin? Is it still 4D chess?
I think he is listening to some key advisors that he needs to. His words matter, and they were having a negative impact on the market. And whether it was Scott Bessent or Hard Lednick or a variety of those folks, somebody got to him and said, you can't say those things. You can't say you're going to get rid of Jerome Powell. You can't say, we'll ratchet up tariffs on China, to infinity, because that impacts the markets, and that ultimately impacts regular people, right? Not everyone's invested in the market the way certain investors are, but if you got a 401k, you are in the market, right? Mm-hmm. And you were being impacted by this. So I viewed it as a good sign that he realized that he's part of the problem with the market right now, and he has to be consistent. And I've said that for weeks and weeks and weeks. The thing business needs more than anything else is predictability, right? And his unpredictability is impacting
But the tariffs would have always done that.
Yeah.
And that was what he ran on.
But I don't know that people thought he was going to do 247 at one time, right? Where we were going to do this globally, right? That's never been done in the history of the world. So,
but clearly, I mean,
talk about big things. That's another big thing.
Like a super smart guy, right? Yeah. Like my brother who works in finance, he has a lot of respect for this guy.
Yep.
And no one could stop him before he went out there with his big chart and saying like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this.
Well,
and now they're getting to him.
I think
they made a mistake on the math on the chart. It turns out the economist whose formula they used is like, they used my formula wrong,
which is unbelievable.
No, it's totally believable. Because the people around him are ridiculous.
You got 10 seconds, Steve, because then we got to go to the bottom of the other news.
Like everything else, we got to stop the super adoration of these supposed smart guys. They're not that smart.
There you go. That's less than 10 seconds. All right. When we come back, maybe we'll do a little bit more in China, but there's also some maybe softening in Wisconsin government that we'll touch on. Green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow, green and yellow. I put it down. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi is on location in Green Bay. What's your view right now, Steve?
I'm looking out at a beautiful backyard in De Pere, Wisconsin.
Oh, nice, nice.
Overcast. Not, well, there's nothing happening at Lambeau right now anyways.
Yeah, anyways. All right, we'll get more later in the show. We'll get your take on what you saw last night. But, of course, we're here with Bill McCaution, Joe Zepecki. Let's move more local.
Who is fully decked out in Green Bay.
Yeah,
so yes, I guess we've not acknowledged
shoes,
that you...
Shoes, socks...
Everything.
Pull over, everything. Green shirt, even cufflinks are Packers.
It's pretty impressive.
Rocking the pack today.
Where are we? Are we going back to economy and China or what?
Let's talk state
going?
Politics.
I was going to say, let's do some state politics since we only have an hour today. We still got to do Rogers Love and Grab Bag.
Yeah, Joe, you're not in charge yet, buddy.
Yes. So I feel like there was conflicting headlines this week. On the one hand, we heard that there is maybe some productive talks happening in regards to a tax policy deal between the governor's office and Republicans in the legislature. And then we also heard that the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee are trying to find a way to write the budget without using digits.
Right.
So where are we right now as far as compromise?
Both things are true and both could happen. So for the listeners that didn't hear this, there actually was a meeting between GOP leaders and Governor Evers this week on a new middle-class tax cut. And it went well.
And that would be separate from the budget, right?
This well, is gonna, or that's the Republicans unknown. Would like it to be separate from the budget. What the governor said post-meeting was he liked what he heard, but he wants it to be part of the budget. And okay. I think I've said this on the show. He was never going to give away that leverage. That would have been the easiest veto in the history of vetoes. If they sent it to him separately, he could say, nope, I want to see it in context with all the other major items in the budget. So I actually viewed it as a positive that A, they met. B, there was some progress, at least on a middle class tax cut. But C, there's still some outstanding issues related to the budget created by the veto decision by the Wisconsin Supreme
last
Court
Friday.
Last Friday. And honestly, for those that don't understand the intricacies of this, that veto would not have been legal, the 400-year veto, had the legislature spelled out the words 2024 versus using numbers, which is seems unbelievable.
That was the Vanna White veto that did went yeah, with Tommy,
it should
right?
Seem unbelievable.
But you can't cross off individual letters anymore.
We
but
may
you
never
could still
see
cross
another
off
number.
Numbers.
We may never see another number in the budget.
Yeah. Numeral.
Numeral,
like a numeral number versus correct. It's spelled out.
I didn't hear anything better than the Jetsons veto in the last week, so I think that's what we're
I
going
get that.
With.
That was mine.
I thought,
yeah.
Oh, give your friend credit who texted it
no,
to
no,
you.
No. He had the eternal veto because it was
oh,
Easter
okay,
weekend.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. It's the Jetsons veto. I'm glad they're talking. I'm glad the governor is holding firm. And the problem
he's not
is,
holding the football
the
firm.
Problem
can we say that?
This budget is going to be contingent on what happens in Washington, D.C. with reconciliation.
In part.
Because if Republicans move forward with this ridiculous plan to smash Medicaid, just to take one example, that's more than $8 billion out of the budget. And that changes the math because two out of every $3 spent on Medicaid in the state comes from the feds, right? Those are our tax dollars and then they come back that way. And so they're linked. We got to get a budget done. We will. But also what's happening in D.C. is going to impact the state budget. And what's happening with Trump's numbers, you know, he's now underwater on immigration and the economy, and his approval is dropping, means that every single day that they don't get this done, it's more likely that a half a dozen House Republicans stand up and say, hold on a second. We're going to get you some tax cuts. We're going to get you some what you want, but we're not going all the way to crazy town. and slashing Medicaid by $880 billion, we will all be voted out of office if we do take that kind of sledgehammer to our local economies. So it's all connected.
Yeah, but there could be a disconnect. I think the state budget will be completed before reconciliation. I'm going to give you a...
I thought you said reconciliation was going to be done in May.
I wish it was, but I was with some good sources yesterday that I think it's closer to the 4th of July where that's going to happen. There's differences between the houses.
Danger.
Which means, yeah, it's big danger.
Danger.
No question about that. But it probably means the Republicans have to pass their budget without knowing how the federal budget's going to look.
The state Republicans.
And the way they solve that is in the fall, they could always do a budget adjustment bill if necessary.
I'd want more in the savings account and the rainy day fund if they have to go
first.
Which
is likely to happen.
Steve, you got anything?
Look, I was known as an elected official for cooperation and communication. I'm buoyed by the fact that Bill thinks that there's some potential here for some cooperation and communication, as I just said. This is like the Forrest Gump phase of Wisconsin politics. It's just stupid stuff. We're arguing about numbers now. That's not how real adults act that are in really important positions. And it just infuriates me that we get this sort of stuff and we look like laughing stocks to the rest of the country. I figure it out. We have a surplus. Get it back to the people that paid it in and stop screwing around.
Mama always said the state budget is like a box of chocolates.
Gotcha. Well,
Steve is like Sister Laura Jean from St. Francis. I heard that speech before from her.
All right. When we come back, Rogers and Love, or Love and Rogers, right?
We're going to have a good time.
We're going to have a good time. This is Point Taken on WTMJ. What are you getting rid of? What are you keeping? Phil, you seem like you're ready to go.
What are you getting rid of? Loving the fact that the Packers took Matthew Golden. We are green and golden.
So that's your love.
Well, there's two parts of it.
Oh, okay.
I love the fact that we chose a wide receiver for the first time since Javon Walker in 2002. But I also love the fact that the NFL let Packers president Mark Murphy do the introduction. He was phenomenal in how he laid that out, got the crowd fired up. It was all so Green Bay and Wisconsin-like, and I loved every second of it. I loved the way that the kid reacted to being a Packer, and that was one of the better drafts I can remember.
I love when Packer fans are happy. I'm not a draft head. I just don't have time for it. I didn't even before I started this crazy adventure.
You could have had some votes out of there, I bet.
And, I just hope this is who Goody wanted and he didn't feel influenced by the fans. Because we don't know better than him how to put a roster together.
Did you hear about his quote
together.
Afterwards?
I did not.
He said he gave Murphy a different name. And then Murphy just did what he did.
Really?
Yeah, he did. It was a joke, okay. But it was hysterical. He played along, right? That's not the name I gave him, but he went ahead and did his own thing.
I love it when we can have a good time.
Yeah.
Speed is, we got to have speed. This kid's a burner, and let's go.
4.2?
That's great.
Yikes. Let's go, Pat.
Was that your love or was that your Rogers?
That was my love.
All right, you got a love?
I think I just loved the how happy Bill is. I haven't seen him this happy in quite some time.
That's a good thing. I like that.
Right,
my Rogers is the Minneapolis DA who is sending to a diversion program a state employee who has tagged six different Teslas, creating $20,000 worth of damage. No charges, diversion program. Governor Tim Walz should fire this employee. It's a bad message. This person is funded by taxpayer dollars. That person has no business being funded by taxpayers' dollars, and they should have been charged. And here's my other example. A lady, a 19-year-old who also had no criminal background, did $7,000 of damage to a different vehicle, and she was charged with a felony. So I think it's this Mary Moriarty, the Minneapolis DA, is showing Minnesotans that there's two systems of justice, and if you're on the right side, according to them, you're going to be good to go. So I'm doing away with Mary Moriarty.
Is there not an argument to be made that there's lots of DAs who have two systems of justice?
There are. Yeah, too many.
Okay.
Too many.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have to go. For all you Catholics out there, like
correct.
Me.
Correct. That's nonsense. It's also nonsense that Donald Trump pardoned Las Vegas City Councilwoman Michelle Fiore, who was convicted of wire fraud charges last year, who stole money from a memorial to fallen police officers.
I don't get that.
So why did your guy pardon her?
I don't know. I don't get it.
It's a bad look. We got to do better, people. Right is right and wrong is wrong.
We're in
agreement. On that we agree.
Yeah. Steve?
I love the fact that this guy, who's a lot thinner than he was when the regular season ended, walked into Lambeau Field yesterday, ordered a sausage, and it was a foot long, and I ate the whole damn thing. And it was delicious.
You had the hangries. I love it.
Oh, my God. It was awesome. And I'm going to Aaron Rodgers. I don't want to see my timeline filled with things about Aaron Rodgers when you're not even playing in the league and you're not assigned to a team. Get out of my timeline.
Was that weird at all yesterday? I thought that as Clay Matthews came out and Lil Wayne came out, I was like, oh, these Mason Crosby.
No Favre, no Rodgers.
No Favre, no Rodgers. And is it just because, one, did they turn it down? Or is it just like, well, you guys are a little too controversial and we don't want you?
They've made their choices.
Baggage. They got baggage.
They made their choices.
Yeah. Real quick on the draft, I want to give a special shout out to Greenfield, Wisconsin's own Nate Valcarcel. Nate played for us at Whitnall. He declared for the draft. He was a Husky at Northern Illinois, had some big plays against Notre Dame in that upset. He is on the board in the secondary. I hope he goes. If you want a kid who is going to work his tail off, incredible at the line of scrimmage.
Is he day two or day three?
He's day two or three. Don't miss out on this kid. He will work his tail off for you, all three levels. Nate Valcarcel, good luck, brother. We're rooting for you, man.
All right, when we come back, we will do our grab bag and wrap things up with Bill and Joe. Steve, you still hanging in there up in DePere?
All is good. I got four coffees in. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, baby. All right, we'll be right back on Point Taken.
I just got off the phone with the president, Donald Trump. He asked me to pass a message along to all 32 NFL franchises. So let me tell you what it reads here, all right? It says, my fellow Americans, the Bears still suck!
Is this the first time you're hearing it, Joe?
I have not heard that. Yep. That is...
Kick it off.
Well done, sir. Hart, I know you're going to talk more about the Packers.
I think we should
take a moment in the grab bag to talk about Pope Francis. A life incredibly well lived. We were here last Friday. By Monday, the Pope had passed. And the first Jesuit Pope, mm-hmm. something that I think we never thought we'd see in our lifetime. I think a lot of people tried to make this Pope things that he was not. And that kind of happens with every Pope in terms of the politics of it. Like the Catholic Church and the papacy does not conform to right versus left in America. And I have certainly spent some time thinking just about the life he led and how we can all try to be better people, no matter what our faith is. This is someone who lived and led by example, washing the feet of prisoners in South America.
Yeah.
And continued that tradition as the Pope. And so as we have these, I think everybody is trying to come from a place of good intention when it comes to how we, you know, protect our border and grow our economy and treat people. I would just ask everybody to spend some time reflecting on how this Pope lived and do what you can to reflect that kind of spirit into how you speak with people who might disagree with you, the amount of grace you give people who are trying to solve really hard problems. I know that I'm trying to do that, and that is one of the ways that I've tried to honor the memory of the late Pope. Rest in power, sir.
Rest in power.
Good luck on the campaign trail this weekend. Listen, if I were in the conclave, which couldn't happen because the basilica walls would collapse, I would be voting for Timothy Dolan, the cardinal from New York, formerly from Milwaukee.
I'll take some action on that.
I think he would grow the church ranks like nobody else. So my grab bag is Clay Matthews. I thought this was tremendous. I'm not going to kid you.
Totally
I was a little nervous when he talked about Trump. I'm like, oh, crap. Are we going to get into politics?
Everyone puckered a little bit right away. I was like, what are we doing?
Is he going to say make Green Bay great again? What is he going to say? But when he said the Bears still suck, the place went berserk, as all the listeners just heard. I thought it was the perfect start to the night. Everything about last night made me proud to be a Packer fan, proud to be a Wisconsinite. You guys all showed well. Packer fans are like no other, and people around the world got to hear a little bit more about Green Bay and about Wisconsin, and, you know, we're the only community-owned team. It's a special place. Lambeau Field, as Steve agrees, is Mecca in football, and the world was watching it last night. I loved it.
Absolutely. Steve, were you in the crowd when that happened?
Yeah, I mean, much love for the NFL and Green Bay Packers for making this happen. But I'm giving my grab bag and my love to all the people, the support people, the Uber drivers who are fantastic, the people, the support people, the folks just answering questions, the media representatives from all over the place. Everyone did a great job on day one, and I expect it to continue for day two and three. I'll be here all day today, and I just love the fact that this is happening this year in Green Bay, and maybe it's a signal of some good things to come when the regular season starts.
All right, Steve, we'll get more of your rundown from your time there when we come back from the top of the hour news, but this has been the Political Power Hour with Bill McCaution and Joe Zepecki on Point Taken. We'll see you guys next week, and we'll be back after this.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Welcome back for the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. Steve is up in and around Green Bay. You were in Green Bay yesterday, right, Steve, right after our show?
Yes, I've been up in Green Bay for almost 24 hours. And it's been an absolute blast.
I mean, we were watching at home last night, and the amount of people in the crowd was just, I mean, how did that compare from when you went to Vegas a couple years back for the draft?
You know, that's a good question, because Vegas is obviously different. Vegas was in a parking lot not attached to the stadium. It was just sort of in a downtown area of Las Vegas. It was cramped, but I never saw the official numbers for attendance, but I wasn't in the regular, like, walking around area. I was in the sort of the inner sanctum because we were invited by the Packers. So I can't really relate that, but I can tell you that yesterday, and I go to a lot of Packers games, it was that times at least two, as we now know, and two and a half probably more closely. And there was a period of time where it was really congested, and then I think people sort of felt their way and sort of spread out a little bit. There was a lot of room. And then those people who didn't want to, you know, fight the crowds could go into the bowl and kind of enjoy it on the big screen, which is, you know, one of the biggest in the NFL. So It was just handled perfectly. And I think, you know, weather was always going to be the big question here. And they sort of dodged that bullet. It didn't rain yesterday. It was sunny for some parts of the afternoon. It wasn't extremely cold. Today, there's a little bit of light rain, but it's supposed to clear out tonight when I'm broadcasting from the Tundra Trio for ESPN 94.5. So I think that bullet has been dodged. Looks like the weekend, we'll see what Saturday brings. But so far, so good. And this is a tremendous thing for the state. And I love the fact that we were allowed to do this. And now we're showing that Wisconsin, as we know, because we both worked the RNC last summer, we can put on these big shows and do it really well.
And I think that's my question as far as, did it feel like things ran smoothly, even though there was so many people, as far as getting food, getting drop off from Ubers, like all the different logistical things most of us don't think of unless you are an event planner. Like, did things feel smooth?
Yes. I mean, there was enough people to like direct you. And I came in through the media entrance, obviously different than most of the fans. But even there was plenty of help. I walked in with Wayne Larrabee, not former voice of the Packers, former WTMJ guy. And we were chatting about how much room the rush center where the media is located is just expansive. I could have spread out and, you know, had my own space. It's a little noisy, but I mean, it's so well constructed. And again, I reminded people during Vince and Eric's show this morning, Wisconsin Morning News, this is an NFL production. They're in Green Bay, but the NFL is really good at this. I've been to Super Bowls. I've been to obviously now two drafts. They're good at staging this stuff. Everything's first class, and they know what they're doing. And for fans who are thinking about it, trust your instincts. Go. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience that you may never get again, at least here in Green Bay. So come and enjoy it.
So is it free entry? You just have to, like, pay for parking? Yeah. You can get there and just walk around?
Yeah, you have to figure out your logistics of getting in and parking. But after that, nothing's free, of course. You get in free, but then obviously you got to pay for your food and beverage. But it's just there's a lot of free stuff you can do. On the ground, you can see the Super Bowl trophies and the rings and all that stuff. You can go to the now NFL pro shop because they've sort of taken over the Packer pro shop. And the greatest thing, I told this to the morning guys, you can walk up the south steps to Lambeau, which those of people who have gone in that way, it's sort of this grandiose staircase, and you walk into the concourse, and then you can directly look on through one of the little tunnels into the field. It's pretty amazing, especially for people who have never been here before. So if you're one of those people who have never gone to a game, here's a chance to maybe see what that feels like. And I love the fact that some of the neighbors who live just, east of Lambeau, they're just walking over and seeing it's just the coolest thing. I love the fact that we're getting a chance to do this.
Yeah, I had a little FOMO last night watching as far as you getting to be up there and me just having to be here holding down the fort. But maybe we'll end the show with a couple more takeaways from Steve, who was up at the draft for in Green Bay for the up until tomorrow. You're staying there tonight too, right?
Yeah, I'm there tonight, and then I'll be on the Fox World Travel Show at 9, hopefully at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
You never rest, man. All right, when we come back, there is a new proposal from Ron DeSantis in Florida on how he thinks Florida should deal with their labor shortage. And so we will get we'll get into that after this on Point Taken. Honoring those who dedicate their lives to keeping us safe, WTMJ is highlighting first responders who went above and beyond this past year through Steve Scafidi's Salute Service presented by Waterstone Bank. You can nominate your first responder now at WTMJ.com or on the WTMJ mobile app. The nomination period is open now through May 9th. Finalists will be recognized during Hero Week, May 19th through May 23rd. Help us tell your stories. WTMJ's Steve Scafidi's Salute to Service, presented by Waterstone Bank. All right, Steve. We just had some more breaking news this morning, and then we'll pivot back to Florida. George Santos, sentenced to 87 months in prison. It's funny because in this interim, since he's left Congress, I feel like he pops up on my Instagram yeah. feed doing lots of podcasts, being kind of a sassy, like still trying to be in the spotlight. And now seems like we'll at least get an 87-month break from him.
Yeah, we'll see how prison works out for him, whether he enjoys that experience as much as he's enjoyed being on podcasts and the like. So, yeah, you know, it's justice, right? I mean, he certainly was someone who was engaged in a lot of nefarious activities, and I think there has to be a reckoning for people that do these things, and sort of this is sort of the extreme absurd example of the absurdity of politics, right? He was just so ridiculous in the things he was doing that you have to mete out some punishment. And to me, it's probably a fair sentence. It's pretty long term, so we'll see if he serves it all and what that experience is like for the young man.
It's still shocking to me that he got through his candidacy with not a single investigative reporter looking into him before he actually got elected. That still to me is the craziest part of this whole story, is that it wasn't because he flipped a district, didn't he? So it wasn't
a
safe seat, like a safe Republican seat that he won. It was he flipped a district, and yet there was no insight or like any reporter looking into who he was, and now has been convicted of wire fraud and aggravated identity theft.
I'll hang my hat on this, on that piece of what you just asked. I think it shows really strongly why they sort of pull back from, you know, I'm air quoting, but you can't see it, legacy media, what some people think it's bad. They actually do the heavy lifting on this stuff. So you find out these stories. And as we pull back from that and get into the world of podcast news and fake news and all that other nonsense, this stuff slips through the cracks. And somebody like George Santos, who's eminently non-qualified or unqualified to be a congressperson, gets in, and then, of course, mayhem ensues. And so that's sort of a warning in my world, a warning shot to anybody who thinks you're going to blow up legacy media in sort of so this search for some other kind of news in fact-seeking.
When you say legacy media, you mean like local media. So like whatever the equivalent local in his
media,
district of like the Journal Sentinel or something
media.
That is as reporters who are dedicated to that area versus expecting that the New York Times is going to care about a congressional race versus everything else that's going on. That's what you mean?
500 plus of those races. Yeah, there's 500 plus of those races. You think they're going to dig in from New York or Washington, D.C. on this stuff? That's where local journalism matters. You work for the Journal Sentinel. You know the former non-retired Bill Glauber and the Molly Becks and Mary Spacuzas. They're damn good at their jobs, and they can find out things. And that's why trusting politicians or parties or elected officials to give us the straight skinny on this stuff is just it's a fool's errand and really dumb. But I know that sort of idea is gaining traction, and it drives me nuts.
Well, I think there's a little bit of it for like I'm a fan of new media in one sense, but I don't think it replaces journalism. Right. As someone who I don't consider myself a journalist. Some people like ascribe that to me, and I always correct them, because when I think of journalists, I think of exactly that. Someone who is going through budgets, someone who is going like doing the painstaking work of actually reporting on things and showing up and getting the direct sources. I feel like I'm someone who provides commentary, but not reporting. And so
I would add informed commentary and educated commentary.
Certainly, but it's still different than being witness to something and reporting on it. And that takes budget, and that takes resources, and that takes newsrooms and an editorial discretion as far as fact checking. Like, I think it was, I'm going to blank his name right now, but the guy who wrote Sapiens and the guy who wrote Nexus most recently, he was on Bill Maher, and he was talking about the fact of like how expensive the truth is, as far as like he's like, fiction is cheap, but the truth is expensive as far as what it takes and human resource to actually vet something to report the truth versus anyone being able to make up anything at any time.
It's why I get very defensive on social media. I've sort of stepped back a little bit from that when people start criticizing the Journal Sentinel because they're reporting things they don't like. Instead of addressing that, they want to criticize the journalist or call them names. Be smarter than that. That's not a good trend, and I don't want to see it continue.
All right. Well, now that we've taken up this segment, now we'll come back after this next commercial and talk about Florida. Yeah, we'll get to it on Point Taken on WTMJ. Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi is up in, I guess, near Green Bay. Going to be on ESPN tonight from 6 to 10. Is that right, Steve?
That's my understanding. Some of it might be on YouTube as well, because there's obviously some other things in sports happening. But I'll start on, I think we have a simulcast, or at least it'll be on ESPN 94.5 at 6.
All right. Very exciting. Well, I just realized, actually, producer Jazz just reminded me that we never got to the Florida story we were going to talk about yesterday. But now we have another Florida story today. So, and kind of potentially, the two could go hand in hand. So yesterday we were going to talk about the fact that there has been a drop in people moving to Florida. So we saw a huge boom for them in 2023, kind of in and around the COVID years. And now there has been a big drop off. Now, is that just the market correcting itself, or is it also due to huge increases in insurance rates and the impact, just the impact of living near the water in Florida and what that could do to property value?
I think it's the latter, right? I know my brother owns a home in Florida, and he said it's crazy, absolutely crazy what's happened in the last 5 years.
Because there's certain insurance companies that just aren't going to insure people. It's the same thing in California as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. So if you have this beautiful home that's been destroyed or you want to replace it, where are you coming up with that if you don't have insurance carrier that's willing to provide that coverage? And a lot of these things are being battled in courts, in state courts, and probably even past that at some point, because these things take a lot of time. And the Florida thing is always interesting to me. I lived in Florida for about a year and a half in the 80s, much different time. Great state, but it had its problems then. It's had its problems now, and I live right on the water. It's an interesting state, and certainly their governor, Ron DeSantis, former candidate for president, is somebody who is sort of a lightning rod for a lot of different people and a lot of different issues.
Well, so it's interesting because I wouldn't have thought of Florida as having a labor shortage because of so many of the stories and the headlines of how many people were moving there over the last couple of years in comparison to Wisconsin, where we know we have a labor shortage issue. But did not think that Florida, but apparently they also have a state labor shortage. And now Governor Ron DeSantis is pitching a somewhat, I mean, depending on who you ask, controversial solution, basically to get more teenagers to work and loosen the child labor laws. And it's interesting because we had, even in Wisconsin, we had this back in 2023 there. I remember there was a proposal to basically change the rules as far as how young you could be to deliver drinks if you worked in a restaurant. And we've kind of seen this trend, not just in Florida, but over the last couple of years, more states wanting to loosen restrictions and let younger people work more. Do you have thoughts on this, Steve?
I love this topic. And you and I are going to do a much more broader, expansive look at this. I'll probably surprise you with my take. I like the fact you're thinking about these things. I have been somebody who's talked for a long time about how education has to evolve. And for many students, traditional education is not a path and not necessarily a career path either. And if we could use 16 and 17-year-olds who have sort of not dropped out, but just not achieved what they wanted to achieve. Now, we have to have basic education. We have to be able to read and write and all that stuff. But if they want to do something different, sort of relaxing some of the hours restrictions, which is one piece of this conversation, extended conversation in Florida's legislature, that might be a path to sort of making more people feel like they're involved in our country's workforce, rather than just sort of, you know, just hanging out there trying to get a diploma, you know, from, you know, diploma mills or other ways you can do that. And I think that's, there's a potential there. Now, I have no idea what Florida's end product is going to look like on this, other than it can't be just a mad dash for young workers. That would be lazy and superficial. I don't want to see that happen. But there's potential here, but it involves both the educational side of it and also the trades, and certainly our all those businesses in Florida and elsewhere that are going to use those workers. I think there's potential there.
But I mean, there's been potential. It's not like there's a bar on people from under 18 from working. There is restrictions and regulations to protect young people from getting exploited. And that's the thing that I think is, you think about the average, a teenager who has parent, like involved parents, and the opportunity to go work and make their own money, and all of that being good. And you think about people who are young, people who have no one in their life who's necessarily going to stand up for them, and the ability for a capitalist society and a maybe not good faith employer to put them in dangerous situations because there is no one who is actually in their corner standing up for them. And then we get into, the reason why we have child labor laws in the first place, and so that children go to school and don't get exploited.
That's why the process and the rules of this matter, and I would advocate for younger than that be working any sort of significant. I worked as a bagger when I was 14 years old, but I mean, that was like, you know, a few hours a week. There's potential here, but it involves all of those entities, educational, business, governmental, all working together. We'll see if Florida's smart enough to figure it out. They certainly figured out how to counter ballots, so maybe they're onto something.
That was a while ago, though, wasn't it?
2000, yeah. But look how good it works now.
Yeah, much better than it apparently works here. All right, when we come back from the bottom of the hour news, there is
I surprised you.
A bigger conversation around, there's two different things. There is a case going in front of the Supreme Court about Maryland parents wanting to have the opportunity to have their kids skip certain classes to opt out. And then there was also a case of a lecturer who was not allowed to give his speech at the Naval Academy. And I just wanted to have a bigger conversation with you, Steve, as far as exposing yourself to things you disagree with and why that is a good thing, at least in my point of view. It is Point Taken with Steve and Kristen. Steve is up in Green Bay. I am in the studio. All right, Steve. So it's so hard because there's so much news every week. But I grabbed this one. So earlier this week, it seemed like the conservative justices on the U.S. Supreme Court signaled that they may require schools to provide some opt out for parents who have religious objections to LGBTQ books. And this comes from a case. So there was Maryland parents who wanted the ability to have their kids opt out of certain themes at school. And the school argued this creates kind of a logistical nightmare. And if the court sides with the parents, this is kind of a bigger case as far as who gets to set boundaries in public schools and how much more of a burden do we put on public schools to accommodate every family.
Mm-hmm. This might surprise you as well. So in that county, they already have exemptions. You can excuse your kids from things like sex ed, which is not surprising. Halloween celebrations, Valentine's Day celebrations. It's sort of one of those be careful what you ask for things. So when you're talking about LGBTQ rights or education, whatever you're talking about, it just gets added in this mix of things that someone's offended by. Therefore, we're going to yank our kids out. So once you start going down this road of, you know, exclusionary education, I don't know. Like, I can't understand why someone would be mad about Halloween or Valentine's Day, but certainly when you talk about religious doctrine that says, well, we don't talk about that in our household because it's not part of our faith, how can you not respect that wish when you're respecting other ones that are maybe a lot less significant? I guess that's my dilemma on this. In schools and parents certainly have to figure this out. And parents have a lot of rights, and probably in the scheme of the last, 8 years, they've gotten increasingly more vocal and more and are exercising those rights at school board meetings and in front of their administrators and certainly to the teachers. So this is sort of where we're going on all of this stuff.
I guess part of this is, and I just had dinner with friends earlier this week who have chosen to homeschool their kids for a variety of reasons. And he was the dad stays home. He's a homeschool. He homeschools the girls. He was a former teacher. And this is not anything as far as, if you want to homeschool, that is perfectly fine. There's different curriculum you can get. But it's like, how much control should each parent have over public school curriculum instead of just like, if there's all this stuff you want your kid to avoid, just homeschool them?
Sure, but not everyone has that option, of course. But I guess this is where
But should the public schools then have to like bend to the whim of any given parent?
Well, parents have a lot of power in school districts. You know that. One, they fund them, and two, they have their children in those schools. I think when you look at issues like this, we're debating the same things that are debated in the public sphere and in the networks and the radio stations around this country. The parents are bringing that to it. That's a byproduct of our increased technology, our second to second, microsecond to microsecond communication. Everybody's aware of these things where they maybe weren't in the past. I want kids to learn. I don't want us to be spending all of our time focused on these kinds of conversations. And I'm not trying to pick out LGBTQ. I understand they have rights. Those individuals have rights as well that have to be respected, not disregarded, not mistreated. So I want to be clear on that. But when we, at the end of the day, and I'm just go back to my basic educational sort of stance I've had for at least 8 years. Teach the basics, get that right, and then you can start worrying about some of the other things that are on the table that maybe you can enhance the educational experience. And I think we're suffering at the first one, at the entertainment of the second piece.
So I know you've said this before, but what was your claim before, that if you should only teach math and English until they master that, they shouldn't have any other extracurriculars?
Well, I would never use the word master. They have to have basic educational skill levels in the things we all need to function: reading, writing, arithmetic. Once they've done that, then they can have access to all the other cool stuff that we all.
But
sort of
what
love.
Age do you decide that they could have access to other stuff? So that's what first graders don't get to have like art class.
No, I'm talking high school.
But what about like social studies? Like, I mean, I feel like the things I remember from elementary school and social studies.
That's a civics class. That's certainly fine. Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Government, knowing what your government does is probably first and foremost the key to having a government that actually functions. We don't have enough of that.
So just anything to do with identity we shouldn't teach?
I'm not saying you don't teach it. I'd say it can't be that and nothing else. That's where we fall down on this stuff when we get in these arguments about stuff that really is just making everyone suffer. Parents, children, school administrators, we're all constantly fighting about it, which again, nothing gets done.
But to me, and then we'll take a break and come back, because to me, so much about an education is consistently opening you up to things that you didn't know before. Yes or no?
Absolutely.
And that is, ideally, educating yourself is a lifelong goal of exposing yourself to think to different ideas, to new ideas, to a different way of thinking. And to me, it is, you are limiting your kid by not letting them get exposed to different things. And then coming home and having a conversation about it at home as far as what your family values are. Mm-hmm. And having both things exist. So when we come back, I want to talk about just that, because the Navy this month canceled a speaking engagement like an hour before it was supposed to happen with author and podcaster Ryan Holiday, who speaks a lot about stoicism. So his whole speech was about, you can't do anything. How are you ever going to compete anything if you don't understand it? So let's talk more about that on the other side of this on Point Taken on WTMJ. It's Point Taken with Steve and Kristen on this Friday. Steve is up in Green Bay, but we're still making it work. This is our first. It's a good test of our listening skills to one another, right, Steve?
I think so. I mean, because I don't see you, and I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm paying attention. I actually am jotting notes, and so I think it's it's a net positive. I actually like the experience.
Well, I like it too. I like it better when you're here. Because we can,
well, of course,
we can gossip at the commercial breaks.
See my face.
Yeah, exactly.
That part's a lot easier.
All right, so I wanted to talk about this because it's a little bit more complicated, I think, when people are children and if they're failing in certain places as far as parental control in public schools. And there's that conversation that we were just having that could have a Supreme Court decision soon. Separately, this was this earlier this month that the Navy canceled a speaking engagement for the Naval Academy in Maryland. And there was a popular podcast. Have you heard of Ryan Holiday before? Do you know who this is?
I've heard the name, but I've never listened to the podcast.
So he is... I didn't know much about stoicism until I started following him. And he's a really, I think he's a really good listen. He's a really good social media follow. So he was set to speak, and it seems like it was an hour before he was supposed to talk. He received a call, and they asked if he would refrain from any mention in his remarks on the recent removal of 381 controversial books from the campus library at the Naval Academy. His slides had been set up as a chain of command at the school, which was now, as it was explained to him, extremely worried about his talk if it appeared to mention that. And he said he wouldn't take it out of his speech, that he was still going to talk about it. And then that was when they were like, all right, we're no longer going to have you give this speech. Do you have thoughts on that? Because the whole thing with banned books to me goes back to what I said before we went to break. It's just, how are you supposed to just outrightly reject something without understanding it at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot wrapped into that question and this topic. So, I mean, stoicism, for people who don't know, it's a philosophy that encourages you to accept things you can't control, focusing on what you can, looking at it in a more positive way. So it goes back to what we were just talking about. With young people, obviously parents have a lot of control over what their kids can see, especially at home, maybe not so much recently as they do in classrooms. But it was always defined this way, and it typically was on sexual theme material, community standards. And that gets a little touchy, and we've had Supreme Court cases and state court cases on that issue over the last few decades, not really resolved. But again, you're talking about a higher level of education here. Banning books at this level is stupid, and I'm not afraid to say that. That's just dumb. What are you doing here? These are not little tiny babies we're talking about. And if you can't listen to someone say something that maybe challenges you at that level, I mean, come on. That's just silly. So I wouldn't support banning a speaker or canceling a speaker for that reason. At this level, it's stupid.
Well, especially because it feels like it's the hypocrisy, because the other way has happened, right? This has been an issue on college campuses when there's been protests or cancellation of Ben Shapiro talking, or what was it, Milo? What was the... With oh, the yeah. long
at Berkeley, that guy.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Or the other Daily Wire guy, Matt Walsh.
Yeah,
is that the
yeah.
guy who's always making tours? Yeah. And so
I would ban Ben Shapiro just for talking too damn fast. But
he does talk very fast.
He does.
But I feel like this is a message that is important. The message of Ryan's speech, because he then went on to write a New York Times op-ed about this, is that he talks about someone. It was James Stockdale. I think it's James, who had gone and gotten a master's in like the social sciences. And it was literally this quote, which says, "You really can't do well competing against something you don't understand as well as something you can," because he went and studied Marxism. Mm-hmm. And this was during in the 1960s. This was during a time when we were fighting communism. Right. And so the idea that you're ever going to be able to shut down and not understand something and just label it as bad without understanding it, I think is a dangerous thing.
Yeah, I remember talking about the young children before, and you didn't say it, but elementary school level. Well, can you perceive these more complex societal cultural issues if you don't have the basic reading, writing, arithmetic skills to even get past like basic comprehension? That's sort of my point. That's why I do make a separation between early ed and later ed. I think there is that line that kids, they've shown they can at least consume it in a way that's not going to bias them or influence what they actually think about it until they actually have a way to process all that information. You know, it's why we have people that are really good at being medical professionals. They've studied, they've done it. Like, everyone's like expert on everything now. I hate that part of our culture. But in some things, yes, you have to sort of mature into the final product. And I think that's sort of what education is floundering with right now. They're trying to figure it out. And it's not easy.
Not easy.
Maybe it shouldn't be.
All right, let's take one more break and we'll come back and wrap things up because there's a new study out that you should embrace aging. And most people, it sounds like, are. So stay with us. Point taken. Someone from the text line from the 815 said, Steve and Kristen are a great combination to cover old school ideas and new current ideas.
Yes, like that, baby, Steve. That's right. Thank you for that text.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're trying to always find more positive stories to end the show with. And we only have about a minute left before Steve gets to go enjoy his day at the draft. But there's new data that shows that happiness and well-being steadily climb with age. Now, Steve, you are quite a bit older than me.
Yes. Significantly older.
Would you agree that each decade has been better than the last for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And different and remarkable in different ways. You know, when you get to be my age, you discover grandkids and how cool they are and awesome. And just between you and me and whoever's listening, grandkids are even better than your own damn kids.
Well, that's because you can give them back, right?
Yeah, you give them back and you can just spoil them. But you learn things. You learn from experience if you're doing it the right way. And yeah, everyone's got challenges. I have challenges. Kristen has challenges. You all have challenges. But the benefits of aging are you should get smarter. But here's the other big thing. Don't dwell on the negative. This is one of the reasons I love doing this at the end of the shows. We're too negative. We got to knock that off. I know people make a lot of money being negative. I don't want us, this show, our station, this city, this state, this country to be one of those.
Well, that is, I don't know. How do I top that for the weekend?
I don't think you can.
I don't think I can. I would also agree, even though I am just shy of 40, that I have each my 30s were better than my 20s, and I have every expectation that my 40s will be better than my 30s. So
there you go.
I concur.
And you're
the,
a young mom. You're killing it on the radio. You got Journal Sentinel work. You got everything going. Social media. The list is long.
List is long. All right, friend. Well, we're officially done with a full week of shows together. I guess it's not actually
there
a full
we go.
Week because you weren't here Monday. So next week we'll aim for having a full 5-day schedule with one another for Point Taken. But have fun up there, Steve. We will see you Monday.
All right, if you're coming up, we'll see you at the draft.
All right.